The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the program Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd. I have, I believe, for you a guest that you're going to enjoy. There's a lot of depth to this man. His name's Todd Pirakowski. And Todd is here. He is a sales consultant, among other things, a business owner. He's a John Maxwell certified speaker, and he loves Jesus. I think that's a pretty good start right there. Welcome to my program, Todd.
Oh, it's an honor to be here, Mike. Thank you so much for the invitation and allowing it to fit into my calendar.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that as busy as you are, my friend, I'm glad that you found the time to be with us.
Well, I should be thinner for as busy as I am, to tell you the truth, but thank you.
That's funny. Well, you know, we all could be. And after Thanksgiving, we are probably all not. But that's a different story for a different topic. You know, one of the things that you do, you're, again, a person that is involved in a number of businesses. Before we get into any of that, I would love to know where you were brought up, where you grew up, and how you came to know the Lord.
I appreciate that, Mike. Everything has a beginning, correct?
Yes, it does.
So let's start there. Originally from the Buffalo, New York area. Definitely getting cold this time of year, thanks to being in Florida. Middle child of three, older sister, younger brother. Father was a musician and artist, and mom, stay-at-home mom at the time. The challenge just really was, I think the word that was missing from our home was a four-letter word, and it was love. Mm-hmm. Actions speak louder than words. And didn't hear the words a lot. And maybe it was just the generation back then as well. Things were different, but also actions. Ended up being an abusive home, mostly mm-hmm. by our mother, and abandonment, all kinds of things. At the age of 10 years old, my mother had abandoned my little brother and I out of the car and just after the blizzard of 77.
That blizzard.
Yes, sir.
And you're in Buffalo that year?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my goodness. That was not a good year to be
no,
in
sir.
Buffalo.
No, sir.
Snow up to the eaves.
True. That's right.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yep. So just kids goofing around, but my parents had been separated already, and just the turmoil of just raising these kids was challenging for her, so she just opened the door. My sister actually held the door open. She was in the front seat of this brown Ford Pinto, we were told to get out of the car on the side of this busy highway, and she took off and never came back.
Are you serious?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. My brother was 7. I was 10. And interesting thing is my grandfather, my father's father, had a convenience store not too far from where we were. At least we didn't know how far, but we could see the water tower. And we knew that Grandpa's store was near the water tower. This was a Sunday, by the way. And believe it or not, we were actually heading to church when this happened. But so we knew we had shoes on. My mother had given our boots away to friends to borrow. And, we just walked until we could get to the grandpa's store. And of course he wasn't there. We knew how to get to grandpa's house from grandpa's store. And we walked there, and then we knew how to get home from grandpa's house. We got home. That was in the morning. We got home. It was dark. And of course get to the house, 'cause that's all we knew was
to
go home.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And no one was home. We walked across the street to a neighbor's house who was still friends with our father.
Mm-hmm.
Called the police, of course, and police report was taken. And that's where the turmoil started for us in child custody and court battles and psychiatric, et cetera, all through that process. My father was awarded custody of my brother and I. And my sister decided to stay with our mother. And at that point, you can see the two paths of our lives really take a change. My dad had, after all that ordeal, had committed to my brother and I that it was just us boys, you know, and he would never get married again. He was only 33 years old. And at that time, I held him to his word. And then within a year, my father was remarried. And, mm-hmm. and to me, in my mind, I was like, he lied to me. This is, I need to look out for myself because no one else will be, and look out for my little brother. Caused a lot of problems at home. Ended up kicked out when I was 14 years old. Lived in five homes after that. And by the time I was 15 years old, I had attempted to take my life for the second time, just because I felt that nobody wanted me. I wanted to be out of everyone's life and not be a burden to them anymore. So that was May 28th, 1983. I was on Saturday morning. I had a lawn mowing business on the side. And out of the blue, my uncle, with my dad's youngest brother, showed up at my lawn mowing business, one of my clients. I'm like, what's Uncle Jimmy doing here? And he said, come on, so I'll take you to lunch. And I was like, no, I'm good. I got my bike, because I had plans. Mm-hmm. I had planned. That was the day, May 28th of 83, was to end my life. Oh. And my uncle shows up, and he said, come on, get in the car. I was like, no, I'm good. Come on, Todd, get in the car. Third time, get in the car. Okay. I respected him enough that I got in the car. And we drove for probably 3 or 4 hours. And it was ironic where God knew what was going on and what my plans were. We ended up at his church parking lot on a Saturday afternoon, and the pastor was preparing the Sunday message in Buffalo, New York. And for the first time when I went there, I heard the gospel for me, not other people, but for Todd.
Yeah.
And I knelt down in that pastor's office that day.
The same day that
you
were planning to take your life.
That is the true miracle.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I should not be here today. The Lord intervened, sent my uncle, who had, ironically, my father was the one that led him to Christ. And now God's sending him to rescue me. Incredible. I got saved. And of course, I didn't understand what it was all about. I just knew that I wasn't walking through these problems alone anymore by myself. I had a friend now that was going to stick closer than a brother. And I was still homeless, didn't have a place to go. Ended up at a shelter in Buffalo, New York at 16 years old, halfway house, where if you get in by a certain time, you get a place to sleep and a meal. If that's it, the doors are locked during the daytime. Through that whole place, my uncle, who was going to get married, that's why I couldn't stay with him, because he was about to get married. He came in to see me one time, and he had walked in, and I don't know who else he knew there besides me, but he walked in, and he walked past me in the home, and he's like, Cheryl? And she's like, Jim? I'm like, who does he know here? A lady in the shelter went to his church. And they told me about a home in upstate New York for troubled teens that was a faith-based operation that took in young men and young girls. And they called a place of second chances. And August 8th of 1983 is when I went there. And only the second time in my life I've ever seen my dad cry. First time when he was served divorce papers. The second time was when he dropped me off. But I knew that that was my last shot. I had nowhere else to go. And God really intervened at that time and went there. And realized for the first time that God made me for a reason. There was a purpose for my life. And this was the first day of the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Cool thing, the night before I left at the shelter, the phone, there was an office, and a member of the counselor had put on the loudspeaker, Todd Pierkowski, please come to the office. And I'm like, what did I do? You know, it's always, I'm always at fault for something. I walk in, she's like, your mom is on the phone. Now, little precursor, after the child abuse charges were filed, it was my brother and myself could not have any contact with our birth mother until each of us reached the age of 16 years old. So that's been 6 years since I had seen or heard from my mother. And I've kind of given the story away, but when I thought it was my stepmother on the phone, because she's the only one that I had known as mom for all the last 6 years. It was my real mother.
Wow.
And she said, Todd, I said, yes. She said, I want to see you. I heard you're going away tomorrow. I said, I am. She's going to see you. And even though I was now 16, 6'3", 185 pounds.
And
I was,
she hasn't seen you at all.
No, since I was 10. And I was, in my mind, I'm still 10, you know, physically larger, but mentally smaller. But in my spirit, I just knew as a believer now, you've only been saved for, you know, a couple months, that I said yes. So she came and picked me up. We went to breakfast at McDonald's. Now she's got a blue Ford Pinto, which is even more funny. And I'm hugging the door because I was afraid. But there was something different about her. And when she went there, she just said to me, she goes, I want to ask you for forgiveness for what I did and what has happened before you go away to this home. And she told me about a story 2 years prior during our separation that she was heading down the same exact road where we were abandoned, where she had made that decision. She was heading, saw the steeple of a church. She pulled into the parking lot and.
Yes.
She went, excuse me,
It's real, buddy.
She went in, went to the balcony, farthest away from you could be from the platform.
Mm-hmm.
And when the pastor was speaking, he said, she's told me she felt as if he was speaking to her directly, mentioning her name. She went down and got saved. God rescued her that day.
My goodness.
So,
how good of God. It's really wonderful.
What Satan had meant for harm, mm-hmm. for wrong, God meant for good. During our time of separation, he not only rescued me, but he rescued her mm-hmm. and brought us back together at that time. To this day, everything's forgiven. Everything. We'll never be as close as a mother and son would be, missing all those formulas through the years, but she is my friend. I know she's been saved. She has become a great inspiration to me. And our relationship continues to grow day by day.
Yeah, she's still with you then.
Yes, she is. Yeah, yes, sir.
That's wonderful.
Yes, so that's just my story of grace. Thanks for letting me go there. I didn't...
That's a great story. I can't imagine at 10 years old being abandoned on the literally on the yes, side sir. Of a road and in Buffalo, New York, and here you're having to make the way. And then the timing of your uncle... And it's all just a picture of God's grace
yes,
to let
sir.
You know that there's a plan for your life that he's not done with you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
That had to be very encouraging. Once you went to that the place in the different city, once you're yep. at Second Chances.
Yes, sir.
That was obviously something that worked for you.
It was. It was incredible. It was a... I call it a Christian reform school. It's probably too literal mm-hmm. a term, but it was a place where you could get, you know, just change your life. Christian-based pastor had founded it in 1981 after having a large church in Rochester, New York that was twice named one of the 50 fastest-growing churches in America. But the challenge was these kids coming to youth group still had to go back to these horrible environment. So God had just really burdened him and opened up this home in upstate New York. The benefit for me was the future is open. I was failing in school, even though I was in honors courses, ended up graduating in 1985 with honors, and went on to Bible college after that. Really wanted to give back and to really serve the Lord that had really rescued me. Mm. You know, the least he died for me, the least I could do was live for him. Did not know at the time that I also, could sing. My whole family's musical. I played four instruments growing up, clarinet, piano, accordion, and, drums. No instruments there. They had a choir for the youth and for the camp that they had, as well as the home. And they were going to put a group together to go to Tennessee from New York and compete in called the Bill Rice Ranch, which is in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, as a quartet. And so they had all the choir spread out in the auditorium. Our music director went through the place, and they picked four guys to sing together, two brothers, Jose and Charlie, John or Juan, he was 14 and I was 16 or 17, just about to be 17 years old, to sing in a group and go to Tennessee to compete.
And that would be like the old the quartet type
yes, sir.
Of a thing.
That... Yep, and we were all teenagers, so we were a boy band before there was boy band, I guess.
That's
and out of and we could not hold the microphone. We decided to do an a cappella hymn, and out of four groups, we came in third, and it was like, this is amazing. Now, at the same time, after we got back, our pastor had a live cable television program. I'd say live because it's truly is like that. And a couple times he would say, hey guys, come on up and sing that song you sang for camp live on, it's called Come Fly with the Eagles was the name of the program.
Mm-hmm.
So we come up and sing and I'm like, wait a minute, if this happens again, we only know one song. We better learn another song if he's going to keep doing that to us. So we actually just got together and learned Sweet, Sweet Spirit. And God started speaking to us. This may have not just been a fluke. This may be something of his plan. And really felt the Lord calling us into a full-time ministry in gospel music at the age of 17 years old. And so the radio program was called Chapel Time. So we became the Chapel Time Quartet. And we went down the following year after being singing for a while, and we took first place in everything and also recorded our first two albums in Paducah, Kentucky.
In Paducah?
Yes, sir.
Oh, my goodness. Yep. Now, I'm from not far from there.
Okay. So Faith Music Missions was the organization. And we were together for about 10 years. We added a girls trio to us. We became the Victory Singers. I probably sang in 5,000 churches. I've been in Washington, the Capitol, a couple of times to sing. NASCAR program, believe it or not, in the early 90s, we got a chance to sing the national anthem in the pre-race show at several Winston Cup NASCAR races back then. Just, you know, more recordings and just a chance to serve. So incredible opportunity.
All this from a young man that had been abandoned by his mom on the side of a road
yes, sir.
On the way to church.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Full circle.
I don't think I've ever heard a story more touching than what that is. And to see the grace of God come full circle in your life, because you've continually grown. And it's such a beautiful thing to see the fact that God redeems, regardless of how rough the start was. He's able to bring you out of that thing. Amen. And he's done it.
Yes, sir. Agreed.
He did
it. Fast forward, the whole other story. I'm not sure how much time we have left in this segment.
We have about 3 minutes before we have to take a break. Go ahead.
Go, no worries. Just God continues to work miracles. My wife and I, when we had met and to get married, we found out we could not have our own children. We ended up adopting out of this home, had just started the Home for Unwed Mothers, and our son was adopted out of that home. We brought him as 4 days old, and he is now 31. He went to the Marine Corps. And God just continues to do great things. There's even a story there in the adoption process, how it almost didn't happen. But God continues to show up and do what he does best out of love for his kids. And that's a whole nother conversation for another time. But
How did you get from up in New York down to Florida?
I had a good friend of mine that was in the ministry with and in the home. That was actually from Brooklyn. He moved to Florida working for a small company in town that you might have heard of called Pepsi.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, carbonated beverages. Every year he would call me, say, hey, when you coming to Florida? When you coming to Florida? And I would say no every time. But for some reason, in the Christmas of 95, in our annual phone call, when you coming? And I just said it without thinking, next year. So 1996 is how we came to Florida. Ended up working for Pepsi as well for several years. And just got continued. And,
was that Central Florida?
Yes, sir.
Orlando?
Yep, right, Orlando. Yes,
oh,
sir.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
Yeah, Pepsi. I grew up with that. Yeah. That was my dad's favorite.
Best stuff.
Yeah, really good stuff.
Yes, sir.
I have a few years of experience drinking Pepsi-Cola. That's awesome. And, again, just a wonderful, wonderful reality that God in his plans, I think of the scripture, Todd, that talks about he places the lonely in families, number one. Mm-hmm. And then he loves us enough to guide us and to lead us where in the country where he wants us to be. And God has obviously moved in your life and brought you. You were a single man when you moved down here?
No, sir. My wife and I were married.
Okay, you were already married by that time.
Yeah, our son was about 5 years old.
Well, I know your wife is very active and in education.
Yes, sir.
I'm looking forward to hearing that in our next segment because she's part of the family over at Altamont Christian School.
Yes, sir.
And I know there's a big story in that as well. My guest today is Todd Pierkowski, and we'll have more from Todd coming up in a moment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're on The Shepherd. Wonderful chat today with my guest, Todd Pierkowski. Todd is, among other things, a sales consultant. He works with Janney Roofing. He's also a John Maxwell certified speaker. Now, when I hear you talk, I can tell that you've had some experience speaking. You know, they say the number one fear that people have is speaking in public. You've conquered that one, my man.
Buddy, let me tell you something. That was not easy. Having such a low self-esteem from my upbringing that you heard in the last segment, I had a hard time speaking or singing or doing anything in front of anyone. Then I had a chance to give my testimony as we traveled to churches and speak, and it was just terrifying. I know that the Lord wanted me to share them, but speaking nonetheless in front of other people is a challenge, especially when you're a teen or early 20s. Part of a singing group and traveling and singing as well in front of people, was even more terrifying. And then to go and as we continue to grow in our ministry and also in our outreach, to be in Kleinhans Music Hall in Buffalo or to be at the Lancaster Opera House in Lancaster, New York, or to be in Charlotte, North Carolina at Pitt Road in front of 160,000 people singing the national anthem is intimidating. There were times that I would get so nervous that I would actually have dry heaves and wanting to vomit on the backstage before I got to the front.
Goodness.
So same guy that before couldn't do anything, paralyzed, is that same guy. So really just kept doing it. When I first came to Pepsi, as I shared earlier, I have motion sickness and just the slightest idea of flying, I would be doubled over with a barf bag. When I got promoted, my first promotion, I was traveling all the time and I'm like, can I drive? And they're like, no, you got to fly. I'm like, fly? Are you sure? Well, you just do it enough, you kind of get used to it. So they just kind of had, now no big deal.
Yeah, so now you can get in a plane without the motion sickness. Without,
yes, sir.
Oh,
yes, sir.
That's great. Yeah. You know, that's got to be a terrifying thing, but I can relate. I mean, the idea of you going from being fearful to seeing in front of a few people to doing NASCAR show, 160,000 fans, yeah, that had to be a big deal.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So how did you meet your wife?
So my wife's uncle was the pastor that ran the organization up in New York, and she had had rededicated her life to Christ, and she wanted to not, quote unquote, work for the world. She wanted to get into ministry, so she, her uncle provided her a job opportunity at the ministry we were serving in. I didn't know who she was. I was in Bible college at the time, and the downstairs area of our Bible college also had a books and tapes and videos, you know, publication department, and one of our Bible college students, his name is Bob, he's from Buffalo, and his wife used to come visit him, and she would work in the tape room as a volunteer, and she had blonde hair. And so one day I walked in and put my head in and said, "Hey, Debbie," and it wasn't Debbie. It was my future wife, but I didn't know at the time. Mm-hmm. I was like, "Who is that?" You know? And then long story short, it ended up being Pam, who's my wife and principal at Altamont Christian School. The coolest thing is we were not supposed to, we almost met 5 years earlier when I was, maybe not five, maybe three, I can't remember the years, to tell the truth, 3 or 4 years earlier. We almost met after student council president at the school. She came to visit her grandfather, who was the pastor's father, and I would have met her earlier. And I had my hand, I was invited up to the house, to the pastor's house for a post, a campaign dinner with the family. And I was a sore loser. I have up to the house. I had my hand on the doorknob to walk in the house, and I never went in. And she was on the other side of the door with her boyfriend at the time at the house. So,
well, that might work out better for you.
Oh, yes. Yeah, this punk, she was like, "This is guy, get out of here." So I almost met her earlier, and
oh,
of
that's
course,
funny.
I never went in. Crazy.
Yeah.
So now I see her, and so we actually were at a college and career activity at the dean of the college, and she went. She was single, of course. And I met her for the first time there. And ironically, the dean of the school, last name is Spurlin, S-P-U-R-L-I-N, they're in Arkansas. They were just here in Orlando about 30 days ago to come see us. They were traveling through town. It was at their house that we met. Mm-hmm. And dated for a couple of years and served in ministry and got married in 1988. So,
when you think back to your experience, what advice do you have for people who would be like you, maybe wanting to be married, maybe wanting to find that Miss Right or Mr. Right, and yet they haven't done that yet?
Well, it's a good question. I hear many people say on both sides, A, there is a perfect person out there for someone. God has a perfect match for you somewhere. Just be patient, be faithful. And of course, not everyone is destined to be married. The Lord clearly defines that in His Word. And there are some that believe that just keep that there is no perfect person, that you just make things work. I'm not sure I believe in that. I do believe in an omnipotent, powerful God that has someone hand-selected just mm-hmm. for me. And so
I'm with you.
I will tell you, when I was traveling, singing all the time, I was getting not a reputation in a bad way, but every city we'd go to, there'd be girls everywhere, even in Christian circles, you know, groupies per se, wanting to meet the guys, because I'm the only Anglo in the group. There was two Costa Ricans, a Puerto Rican, and me. Which is the funniest thing, how God just put us together to sing together. But after a while, I was like, you know, this is just getting old. We get in with the concert, we'd pack the bus, I'd sit in the dark and wait for the driver and all the guys to come out before we left. And I just made a commitment about 6 months before I met my wife that the next person I'll meet would be my wife, the next one. And it was actually when I met her. Least expected it. Just had no clue at the time, but God had a plan, so...
Did you go off the road after meeting her and then?
No, we did not. We still traveled, of course, because we were a large part of the ministry. And my wife traveled with us because she was running the books and tapes and Bibles, distribution for that. So she traveled on that side and we would do the singing on the other side. And her uncle was the one that would preach or do a banquet or a rally or church or whatever. So, yeah, she traveled.
Yeah. Would you want to be back on the road again ever?
Maybe. I'm older now, you know, mm-hmm. my son has grown. My wife and I are both very active, and it's crazy because if I did, maybe we'd have a chance to do it together. I didn't look forward to the days away from home. as much as I was away traveling.
Yeah. I love music and I love to travel, but putting those two things together and doing it all the time seems overwhelming to me.
Yeah, living out of a suitcase in a hotel room all the time definitely gets old.
Yeah.
I was traveling over 200 days a year. It gets old, especially when you have a family.
You're with John Maxwell. You've become one of the certified speakers, and I know that's a process. That's a pretty big deal to go through and to get that. Congratulations on that. How did that come about?
So I have been teaching John Maxwell's principles and from his books for many, many years. And 2011, I got a phone call from the John Maxwell team. They were just about to start the John Maxwell team of speakers, coaches, and trainers to be a founding member of that organization. And at the time, timing, of course, is everything. I was not mentally or spiritually or physically prepared to make that jump in 2011 to become a founding member of the John Maxwell team. Even because that's how I was selected, because I was always subscribing or supporting the organization, mm-hmm. et cetera. One good friend of mine who was a pastor here in town as well was on Equip, which was one of John Maxwell's ministries and programs that they had. Another friend of the family was working with Enjoy Stewardship Services. So all kinds of interesting connections back in those days. But I just didn't feel that was the time. 5 years later, one of my great friends and mentors here in town, Tom Martinez, who was also a John Maxwell coach, he took that call 5 years prior and became one of the founding members. But he and I connected through the local circuits here and said, Todd, there's anybody ever met that would be perfect for this. It's you. I said, I know. I ran from it 5 years ago. He said, let's do it this time. So at their five-year anniversary, he invited me and I took the challenge. And
second time around, you did it.
Yeah, 2016. So it really helped launch really what I've been trying to do is really accomplish, to lead others, to really be an encouragement, to teach and to exhort as much as I can. You know, the spiritual gifts and also talents. And just both of those combined is really gift of encouragement and administration and training has really kind of come down to for me.
How does all of that work out? Where do you do this now?
So I have opportunities, not only when I came to Janney Roofing in 2016, when the owner, just a young man, but third generation leader, great, great, great family, great heritage and legacy, had asked me to assist him in helping to do his business and to build it the right way. Especially when his pastor, when his father had been my pastor for 20 years and great, great man of God that I have followed and been for many years. He said to me, his exact words were, Todd, my dad's too busy right now. Could you help me do this? And I was just so honored that he asked. That is how it started with Janney Roofing. I was not even planning on coming over at the time. It just how God had a plan. Working for corporate America and having meeting so many people in my circles, I'm in a few different boards and nonprofits and chambers of commerce. It really becomes now, it used to be corporate and now it's become individual, where I have individuals that have followed me or watched me, asked me to coach and help and train them.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's now I know you're involved in the Christian Chamber in Orlando as well.
Yes,
so,
sir.
With Crystal Parker now, and what would be your role there?
So I'm a member. We're all ambassadors of Christ, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Whether I have a title or not to support that. So I'm really just helping other people understand what it really means to be part of a Christian chamber. That demographic seems to be just one of many other chambers are involved in. But the interesting thing about our identity in Christ, that trumps everything. It doesn't matter my race or my creed or my gender or my hometown or whatever. Everything else is filthy rags compared to my identity in Christ. That is mm-hmm. what brings us together. So all of us really should be doing that already in our lives. Don't need a chamber to help us do that. But the mindset of being kingdom driven in our business is important. And then on that, I'm also part of the President's Circle with the Christian Chamber of Commerce. It's just really just a closer knit group of people really trying to help not only support the leadership, but also really trying to mentor those coming around us to help them really understand and really fully embrace what they have in front of them. Most people don't really understand how great they have opportunity to be not only in business, but be in business for the Lord in the world.
One of the things that I've found that is really remarkable about Central Florida is the number of people that I've come across that really believe exactly what you've just said, that the whole thing about being a businessman and the role of being a kingdom representative, a marketplace minister, as it were. That term was new to me, although I've believed the principles behind that term for many, many years. I think many people have gotten derailed trying to serve God and thinking that the only way I can really do that, the way I can see being effective, is to be a pastor. And yet we've known that many people tried to enter that role without the calling by God to do it and ended up being frustrated and then feeling like they failed. But they haven't failed. When you're doing what God called you to do, it doesn't matter what the calling is. You're doing what God's called you to do.
Right. When I came to Florida and left the ministry and came to Florida to work for Pepsi, for example, I had friends of mine that were still in the ministry saying, "Hey, Todd, I'm so envious of you." Why? Because you're out in the world, having a chance to be a witness, be the salt and light into the world right now. That when you're in ministry full time, you have a captive audience. But when you're in the world to do that, it's really a great missionary opportunity to be right here doing that. And I think the other challenge is when it comes to business, it's really, what are we all in business to do? It's to make money. But I think some people shy away from that because how do I make money as a Christian and to do these things separate from my relationship with Christ? They can be the same.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be the same because it's not, you can't separate it. How can I best describe it is we are ambassadors for Christ in this world, but we can also do business as a believer and still honor the Lord in what we do. It all comes down to stewardship in my mind, and mindset. It's not my house or my car or these clothes. These all were provided to me by the Lord, by his blessings to me. This is God's car. It's his house. It's his clothes. I'm just a steward. I'm just managing what he put into my care. Not everyone gets the same. That's why the parable of talents, one got five, one got two, one got one, right? So we don't all get shares equally, but we all have the equal responsibility to do that. I have a good friend of mine who is Jewish. And he had, I've been friends for many years. I've been witnessing him for a long time. And I just said to him, I said, "Hey, Kenny," I said, "besides being God's chosen people, what's the main reason why the Jewish race is perceived to be so successful?" And at first he didn't want to answer me, but after a little prodding, he said, "You know, Todd, say the truth. If we have a choice as a Jew to do business with a fellow Jew, we'd rather do that than do business with a Gentile." And then he said this powerful statement, Mike. He said, "We try to keep it in the family." That hit me like a ton of bricks.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't God's people think the same way? It's not my money. I'm not trying to find the cheapest route. I'm trying to find what's best for me and my family, but it's not mine to begin with. It is his. People go say, "Tithing, I have to give the Lord 10%. No, no. He's letting us keep 90. That's the mindset shift, right? So being that, knowing that everything they put into our care is because he trusts us with it, and wants us to be a good manager or steward of what he put into our care, that's how we should be thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm making a decision to do business or to sell or to buy, let me put it through the filter of what's best for my Lord or for him to be my Lord over all of my affairs, not just relationally or spiritually. For some reason, when we talk about money, God doesn't have a part of that, but he needs to be. He needs to be a part of every conversation, not just the other things besides that.
Yeah, he was very present even at the giving of the mite from the widow.
I mean,
he was there and he was aware and used it as a teaching opportunity. He's very involved, and some would say there's more about giving and more about accountability of our finances in the Word than just about any other thing.
Right. Even like today, for example, I know this is being pre-recorded for when it's going to air, but this is Giving Tuesday. And people always want to give, but they give what's left over, whatever I have at the end of the month or whatever extra money. That's not really what God's looking for. You talk about the widow's mite. That's sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
So when I learned from Dr. David Janney, who is our owner of Janney Roofing's father, who was our pastor for many years, he taught us about faith, promise, missions, giving. I am asking the Lord to bless us beyond what I have in my grasp right now and trusting him to provide for this miracle of giving a commitment that we feel the Lord has given on our heart to give something bigger and greater than us. He will provide that, and that shows who he is because he's sovereign. He's going to bring all that through. And so I got the promotion the next week, or I got the big raise or whatever. Some people would say, "Well, that's what happened anyway." Would it? I really like to trust in the fact that the Lord provided the opportunity so he could fulfill and be glorified in the promise and that what he put into our hearts to serve him. And really, like I said, it's all his anyway.
Mm-hmm.
God is our source.
What a freeing thing it is, isn't it, to come to that when you realize that everything that we have belongs to God. It's not, like you said, the 10%. It's all God's.
It's all his.
That's right.
He lets us keep 90. How cool is that?
Yeah, that's right. My guest today is Todd Pierkowski, and we're going to be back with Todd one more segment. Don't go away. You're on Afternoons with Mike. Back again on the program, in the studio with me, Todd Pierkowski. We were talking about the fact that the day that we're recording this is Giving Tuesday, and this whole thing about giving is something that Thanksgiving kind of opens the door for this, but really the whole Christmas season, when we think about it, it was all about the Lord giving us the greatest gift that's ever been given, and that was His own begotten Son, who came for us, came as a baby in a manger. And, you know, we just can't outgive God. That's one of the beautiful things that I believe the Lord has given us in this season. And I really do love how you're talking about it. One of your hero kind of guys was Paul Harvey. And you were telling me a story about Paul Harvey. Won't you share that?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, being a salesman by profession, most people shy away from that. Like, I don't want to, what do you do for a living? I'm in auto, or I do this. I used to shy away from telling people I was in sales. It was a sales, for some reason, had a stigma of sleaziness or whatever. And I'm like, but that's the gift that God gave me. I can't shy away from that. There's no other way I can describe it. Until I heard when Paul Harvey had passed away, they were playing a montage of all of his programs on the radio. And one in particular caught my attention, and I've never forgotten it. And of course, Paul Harvey, everything is, and that's the rest of the story. I think he had dentures or something.
Yeah.
Like, talk like that. But he was like, so he said, in one of the episodes, he said, I am a salesman.
You're like, starting to sound like Sean Connery on it as well.
Yeah, a little bit. That's my impersonation. Not very good. I'm a salesman, and I'm thinking to myself, I didn't think you were a salesman. I thought you were a radio host. But when I thought about it deeper, he is selling products on his program that help sponsor and support him to
do
what he does.
A lot of endorsements.
Big time. Big time. And I realized endorsements were that part of the selling process. Mm-hmm. But he said something very powerful to when he was talking about being in sales, and he was proud to be a salesperson. The biggest thing was people associated his name with the word quality.
Mm.
And when he talked about what the rigorous tests that he would put companies through before they earned the right to be on his program, the first thing he wanted to do was always check the leadership. He would travel to the facility or the manufacturing or whatever it was that he was looking to endorse. He would meet the leadership, take a tour of the facility, and really meet the people behind. Like Marcus Lemonis always says, the people, the process, and of course the profit. But interesting, just reading the people. Then he would try the product at his house for 6 months to make sure there was no flaws. He'd actually stand behind it. And then and only then did he even make the criteria to be potentially on his program.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about how awesome it was to be in sales, but then he started bragging about, you know, and really envying, in a sense, the 100% commission salespeople. How that's the big leagues of selling, the Super Bowl of selling was to be 100% commission, because you're really in control of your own destiny to do that. And that's okay. And that's what I find myself doing. Most of my businesses, I have some that are service-oriented. I have other businesses that are sales-oriented, et cetera. But really, sales is not a dirty word. Sales is really just an exchange of ideas agreed upon, and maybe have some kind of transaction where it is agreed upon what they're looking to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
It's really simple. Sales is, you know, God had given us 2 ears and one mouth. We should do twice as much listening as we do speaking. All true things.
Mm-hmm.
But we can do it ethically and honestly and with integrity. Very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really how that came about, is really just really becoming proud of the gifts that God had given me in sales and or public relations or advertising or marketing. They all go together. But really, we can be a good ambassador for Christ. Because the biggest thing, as we were talking today earlier, I was doing an event with the Christian Chamber as well. There's a lady, Deb Brown Marr. She wrote a book called Selling Like Jesus. Like, wow, is Jesus a salesman?
Oh, wow. You know? I'm sure there's a lot of people who would hear that title and they just would freak out.
And if you think about it, though, Mike, aren't most pastors or preachers are really in sales? And I say this in a good way, not in a contrite way. For someone to be saved, don't they first need to be convinced that they're lost?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sales process in theory, of just really going through that process of education and where things stand and really getting that buy-in. People realize, hey, I need a savior. because now it's never been presented to me like this before. The Bible is never alive to me before. People are showing me the truth now.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it is. So that's the culmination of that. And in business, it's the same way. I want to be ethically honest and use integrity. That's our company as well with Janie Roofing, for example. Honesty, quality, integrity, and generosity. Giving back and honoring the Lord, not only individually, but also as a company. Blessing the Lord. When people do business together, we are actually furthering the kingdom together by choosing to do business with each other. Knowing where the dollars go once they go where they're going. I'd rather give it to someone that I know they're going to go further to the kingdom, mm-hmm. or am I going to make a sale or do business with someone that I know is going to hit the bar after we get done today? My dollar didn't go far there, but it's going to go further in doing business with a kingdom-minded business or business owner that I know the dollar goes further, because that's really expanding the kingdom by doing business together with his kids, with my brothers and sisters and the Lord in this world today.
Do you think that the reason that there would be so many in sales that might stoop to, let's say, principles where there's not truth, there's not integrity, is it because it's just easier to close a deal in their mind? Is that why they do that?
Well, the challenge is the dollar. You know, we're all chasing the dollar. But I think the mindset, what changed for me, was realizing that God is my source. I'm not dependent upon my skills and abilities, et cetera. I will go through the motions as a salesperson, in a sense, to do the required steps. But at the end of the day, the outcome or the results are up to the Lord. I trust him for everything, not just the small things, but the big mm-hmm. things too. I think most people, if they make it into sales, may just think it's a stigma because of what they've heard. But we can do it differently. Number one is the truth. Tell the truth, always. Because that's all we have. One of the things my dad taught me when I was a kid was, at the end of the day, you only have two things, your word and your name. Protect those two mm-hmm. things at all costs. And I think if we keep that filter in mind, it really changes the way we do things. It takes away the temptation the devil puts in to lie or to mistreat or to finagle or whatever that is. It should not be manipulation or coercing.
Yeah.
That's not sales. That's not sales. That's not true salesmanship.
It's manipulation.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, loving your neighbor as yourself, the golden rule. The golden rule is supposed to be loving your neighbor as yourself, although some people think the golden rule is he who has the goal makes the rules. That's not how it's supposed to be. So really, it's really about just being a good ambassador, tell the truth, educate, lead, answer questions. And I really just, my intention in sales is really to educate, let people make their own decision. And I think if you speak every man truth with his neighbor, as the Bible says, it just comes out in the wash and it's usually favorable. And if it's not something supposed to happen, I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
God has something else better in store for me.
For the people who would be listening who are salespeople in their particular business or whatever job it is that they have, this thing that you're talking about, trusting the Lord at the end of the day, that it's the Lord that brings the increase, how do people who are hearing that, who are having a hard time really kind of applying that, how can they grow in that?
That's a great question. I think it's faith, of course, faith-based. And a lot of times the biggest opportunity we have is between what's between our two ears. It's our mindset. It is our faith level. It is truly understanding that God is in control and he's got it all planned out ahead of us. You know, the interesting thing about Psalm 40 is having his word being a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. It doesn't say the light unto my destination. I don't see the ultimate target or goal.
Mm-hmm.
He only gives you a couple steps at a time because I'm on the path. I'm on the journey. It's different for everyone. Maybe their comfort level is a little bit different, but if they truly understand that God's word is true and that he really wants to take care of his kids, I think, and I don't mind talking with someone, they can contact me anytime they want to. But really, it really comes down to the heart. Matters of the heart, not so much the head. Following the Lord and what he has instructed us to do. Live life with integrity. Speak every man truth with his neighbor, like I said. And just let the Lord lead. I think we're going into someone's house, if a customer, et cetera. I also make sure I'm looking at the customer or the client through God's eyes and not my own.
Mm-hmm.
Letting me see them who he sees them as, not who I see them as. And you know what? Even though we'd love to do business with everyone, not everyone's a good fit for us. Sometimes God is trying to say, this is not a good fit. If the Spirit's telling me this is not a good opportunity for me and my family or my business, I walk away
mm-hmm.
because it's just not worth it.
Getting that kind of peace is a really big deal. If you can get that That's a great step toward the kind of salesperson that I believe God's calling people to be. If they can trust the Lord and have peace at the end of the day.
And there's nothing wrong with making money either. Money is, people say, well, money is the root of all evil. That's not true. The devil knows the Bible too, right? And he twists his words.
Mm-hmm. It's the love of money.
The love of money is the root of all evil. Mm-hmm. And that's what's the difference maker, I think, is the mindset as well. Is it the love of money, chasing that almighty dollar? Is it really serving the Lord and let the dollars take care of themselves?
Mm-hmm. What's 2022 looking like for your companies that you're a part of?
Well, growth, of course. It's amazing for, let's use Janie Roofing, for example, who's been a tremendous blessing and asset to our local economy as well as to the state and also for missions worldwide that we have a chance to give and serve through what we do. During a COVID year when we thought we'd be shutting down and scaling back was actually a record year. And this year was even greater than last year. So praise the Lord for that. And just having the chance, because we know that it doesn't belong to us. Our owner, Derek Janney, just a tremendous leader and Christ follower, just understands. And of course, having his dad, Dr. David Janney, on our staff, almost like a chaplain leading the team. And our staff meetings are devotions and encouragement, not browbeating like other companies would have. Just our culture is just so different. But really, just honoring the Lord in our first fruits and what we do really makes the future look bright. When the rest of the world's falling apart, God takes care of his own.
Mm-hmm.
For my other businesses I have, whether it be security or whether it be my consulting business or whatever, I really, Matthew 6:33, I just seek him first, you know, and all his righteousness and all these things will be added unto you. We have to make plans. We do our strategic planning, all those forecasts, et cetera. All those things happen. I don't want to get too deep into the business side, but that is all factual. It happens. But really, the Lord's the captain.
One of the things that I do want you to speak to, if you will, and this is that thing that motivation and initiative for a man that has a family and he's wanting to be a good provider, and maybe he's underemployed from the standpoint of income and all that. What advice do you give to people about stepping into a passion that they may have that they're not touching, but they could probably give some attention to? What advice do you give them?
That's a great question, Mike. It's a tough call. There's some of the most miserable people are the ones that are working a job that they hate, but I know that it pays the bills. So we always ask someone, you know, what would you, if money was no object, what do you love to do?
Mm-hmm.
They say if you love what you do, you find a way to get paid for it, you never work a day in your life.
That's right.
And it's a fact. Find out, what are you passionate about? What do you really feel like the Lord calling you to do? What do you think you should be doing? What are your gifts? What are your talents? Follow that. We need to pay the bills. We understand all those things, but I really think we should follow that and ask the Lord for his leading to do that. Underemployed or looking to make the life better, sometimes you got to work 2 or 3 jobs. I get it. I've been there. But really just understanding the goal is to be Christ-like. And you know, the man that does not provide for his family, the Bible says, is worse than infidel. So it's definitely got to make sure we're working, not sitting back waiting for something to fall out of the sky. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question exactly.
No, I think that does it.
Exactly,
I mean,
right.
Because people can get into striving on this, and or they can do the other thing and do exactly what you just said. It kind of pray, you know, that, well, if the Lord's going to, if he's going to hear me, then he'll answer, and an answer will fall out of the sky.
Right.
Like
right.
You said, and that's not necessarily going to happen at all.
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing, you probably heard this before, Mike, you know, when we die, on our tombstone will be our name, of course, and the beginning year when we were born and the date of when we passed. But the biggest thing is that dash in between the two dates.
Mm-hmm.
That's a symbolism of our life. What does that dash represent? What are we going to leave? Something that Dr. Janney had spoken years ago that I'd never forgotten. He said an inheritance is what you leave for your kids, but a legacy is what you leave in your kids.
Mm, well said.
Yes, and that's really just leaving a legacy. And it's not just business. I'm going to leave a legacy that my kids and grandkids know that their father or grandfather followed the Lord, that knew the Lord, and really follow that example as well.
That's wonderful. Todd Piorkowski, my guest today. Todd and Pam, part of our community here in Central Florida. So grateful for you and Pam's work in at Altamont Christian School as kind of like the headmaster or whatever their role that they have over there. I know that you guys have some fun plans, I'm sure, for this Christmas season that's ahead of us. And we thank you for coming by today and sharing from your insights.
Yes, sir. My pleasure.
It's really great. Todd Pierkowski and friends, thank you for joining us today. We'll see you the next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.